I am officially declaring a national emergency.
Unprecedented times call for unprecedented actions.
Starting tomorrow, NBA play is suspended.
NCAA has canceled the men's and women's basketball tournaments.
Welcome to Managing the Crisis, brought to you by Core Image Studio.
The number of Americans filing claims for unemployment benefits has hit a record high.
There are fears that the Dow will drop and drop quickly.
The media giants are under pressure from a dramatic pullback in ad spending.
Now here's your host, the president of Barrett Sports Media, Jason Barrett.
Greetings once again. I am Jason Barrett. Thank you for checking out the Managing the Crisis podcast presented by Core Image Studio. We're up to episode number 8, and I'm looking forward today to bringing you my conversation with someone who's earned the industry's respect for decades as one of the top programming minds in the business. He is the architect of WFAN. Mark Chernoff will be here for a discussion on the current media climate and how he and his team have adjusted in New York City as a result of the coronavirus outbreak. If you missed the news yesterday, New York has had its shutdown extended until May 15th. President Trump announced that some states will begin the planning stages to reopen. There's going to be plenty of debate and discussion on those subjects as we move forward. Ultimately, the results are going to tell us whether or not the decisions were right or incorrect. I think regardless, though, of whether you lean right or left, we all want to see the country back to normal, people able to make a living and take care of their families, and of course, support local businesses. From a sports standpoint, Trump has put together a group of owners and commissioners to develop a plan to put sports back into action. I know we're all starving for competition. I want to see games on television and hear them on the radio just as much as anyone. But that said, I also want the entertainment experience to be strong. I've watched, for example, the WWE's product the past 5 weeks, and it struggled, and ratings are down. And it's not for a lack of effort or trying to do the right thing to entertain fans. It's because watching people compete in empty buildings with no crowd reactions is tough. I think the NFL and college football are probably in the best shape to weather the storm because they'll play once a week. But how is it going to work for baseball, hockey, the NBA, who have games on a nightly basis? If you don't have fans there, it's going to take away from the atmosphere. Furthermore, if the audience sizes decrease, that then impacts advertising. If networks can't make the same amount of revenue on the games, it's going to change what they offer leagues to present them. If those revenues decline, players then feel the sting from it. We've all wondered when the sports bubble would burst. If this situation were to linger for 18 to 24 months, as some experts have predicted, I think we'd have our answer. But because we're just 5 weeks into this and they're already calling for states to reopen, I can't see much changing yet on that front. But it will be interesting to monitor because it all circles back to making money. And if each area of the industry is impacted in its ability to do so, that could lead to a whole lot of change. We'll keep our eyes on that. But since we can't get answers to that situation, I want to turn the attention towards the sports radio industry. When it comes to managing through crisis, few programmers in the business have gone through what Mark Chernoff has. Whether it's been working in the Big Apple during 9/11, running the fan during the tension-filled Mike and the Mad Dog years, or overseeing the radio station when controversies hung over the heads of popular personalities such as Don Imus and Craig Carton, Mark has seen it all. So I thought it would be valuable for others in the business to hear his insights on crisis management and learn how he's responded to the present issues we're facing across the country, given that New York City has become the epicenter of this global pandemic. Mark, I just mentioned how you've been the definition of battle-tested for managing through difficult circumstances. So I want to start by looking at how the current situation has affected day-to-day operations in New York at both WFAN and CBS Sports Radio. What are you having to do differently right now?
Well, for one, you have to be very creative. Two, you have to be very flexible. I mean, just think of those two words. And I think it applies not just to our two brands, but to an awful lot of brands out there. It's a different world, you know, operating both WFAN and CBS Sports Radio out of New York, with New York being the epicenter of the COVID-19 crisis, makes things probably tougher because in a lot of cities around the country, the situation is obviously not great, but not as much of a crisis, you know, in the buildings and for all of the hosts. The flexibility begins with our hosts. You know, we set almost all of them up at both places on Comrex. Mm-hmm. Some are using the GoPro Live, you know, for like our anchors are able to do that because they don't have to do longer shows. It gives them good voice quality, but for, you know, shorter bursts. But the hosts have been amazing in how two hosts, particularly on a show or my morning show on Fan, which has four people. You've got four people on remote on Comrex. You have Boomer, you have Greg Giannotti, Gio, you have Jerry Recco, Al Dukes. They're all on Comrex from four different locations. And you have Eddie Scazzeri running the board from the radio station and having to make sure that all of them are up and running each morning. We're also, as you know, on CBS Sports Network. So we have to make sure that we're connected into TV. But the chemistry is so good that you wouldn't necessarily know that they're in four different locations, which if you think about that, that's pretty amazing. I mean, it's hard enough for, you know, many of my other shows where there are two hosts and different locations. But just think of that. Four people plus a producer back at the radio station having to handle all of that stuff. It's really been truly amazing.
One of the strengths of your morning show has been chemistry. I mean, those guys, when you listen every day, it sounds like they've been together for a long time. One thing that was interesting that you brought up, I hadn't even thought about, was the Fan has been built, since I've known it, so much on having that consistency with updates. But how do you do sports updates when there isn't no sports news? Or I should say, maybe there isn't no news, but it's definitely drastically reduced. How have you guys had to adjust that?
Well, it is reduced and it is different. So we used to do three sports reports an hour on FAN, although we had cut that back during the day, realizing that we didn't need to do as many of them.
Right.
So we still do top of the hour sportscast on WFAN. We do the once an hour on CBS Sports Radio. And you'd be surprised, there really is enough news, whether it's some interesting news about baseball, or you've got all the football draft stuff, or what's the NBA doing? What is the NHL doing? You had the Olympics story out there. You have other sports. Even we'll spend some time on WWE, which may have been pushed way off to the side in the past. But, you know, and it's entertainment, but it is sports. So there are surprisingly more things to talk about than you think. So we are able to do updates. And I think that's important for the consistency of both the radio station and the network. And we do have sponsors on many of those reports as well. The flexibility part of it, you know, does relate to sales, as does the creativity. You know, there are sponsors out there who some are staying in business and doing whatever they're doing, whether it's grocery stores or restaurants that can do delivery or pickup, or certain industries, you know, fire, police, all the first responders in the hospitals and in doctor's offices, you know, they're working. They may not, you know, all be excited that they're in the situation, but they're unbelievable in that they're still doing it. So they're being flexible. Our advertisers are also being flexible. You know, our salespeople, our AEs, they may not be coming into the office, but they're out there every day, you know, speaking to clients, working with the clients, coming up with creative ideas for the clients to make sure that, you know, if there's any way we can service them. You know, car dealers are not selling cars right now, but their service areas are open. So that's what we'll promote for them if that's what they need. Insurance companies are selling insurance. You know, you hear a lot of like AARP and some of these other companies. They need to tell people that they're out there, that if you need to get their benefits, how you can best get their benefits. If you want to sign on with them, how best to sign on with them. And the spots themselves have been very creative. And, you know, our creative people are still doing their work. Our hosts are speaking to clients when asked to. They've been on many sales calls. Obviously, you know, they can do video sales calls. They can do audio sales calls. We've had John Sterling and Howie Rose and Susan Waldman and Wayne Randazzo, both Yankees and Mets, because, you know, we have the Mets on WCBS, you know, speaking with our advertisers, recording things for them if needed. They can record spots for them if that's what they would like. You know, it's a different world, and we have to adapt to that world and make sure that we're being flexible, as I said, and being creative and, you know, making sure we understand, you know, what they need. As a teenager, I worked in a drugstore in Fort Lee, New Jersey. And one thing I'll always remember, my boss, his name was Arthur Peskin, said to me, "Customer is always right." And that applies to our business here. And we have two kinds of customers. We have customers who listen to the radio, or however they're reaching us, smart speakers, mobile, computer. And we have our advertisers. And they're always right, because we want them to be listening and we want them to be buying ads. So we have to listen to them and what the issues are with them. And we realize in the sports world, it's a lot tougher. There aren't as many topics to talk about because there are no games. You know, you can't say, how'd the Yankees do? How'd the Mets do last night? You know, we have between baseball, football, basketball, and hockey, we have 9 professional teams. You can add in soccer teams as well, you know, 2 in the area. So that's 11 professional teams right there and any lower level beside that. So there's a lot that we're not getting scores of any of those games because they're not playing games. But, you know, the leagues, you know, they're in existence. There is news. Baseball has different ideas. You know, will it get started? Won't it get started? If it gets started, how will it get started? You know, the NFL now has to be thinking, are they going to have OTAs? Not likely. Are summer camps going to open on time? Maybe. You know, will there be people in the stands? Well, you know, some cities and states have said there won't be any, you know, live concerts. There won't be any live sporting events that involve having, you know, crowds there until whatever the date they've chosen is. So everybody's got to think of all of the workarounds. So it's not just us that have to be creative and flexible. The leagues have to be that way. One of the commissioners made a comment, and I think it was Adam Silver, and this is not a quote, but I thought it came from him. Mm-hmm. About a month ago, he said, you know, we should know in a month what we're doing. And it's like a month later, it's like, we don't know anymore now. We may even know less than we knew a month ago about what we're doing.
Well, this whole situation has really, you know, yeah. I mean, who can prepare for this? This isn't something anybody has a playbook right. for. And there's new information, it seems, right. every week.
You know, one of the things I was thinking about radio over any of the other industries is how we can switch messaging for people on a moment's notice. Again, in other cases, you know, you want to serve your client. And if the message for our listeners has to be one thing about COVID-19 now, and then that message changes, we can get that message out there to more people quickly than any other medium can do it. If our advertisers want to change their spot, you know, takes a little longer for TV to do something.
Yep.
If you want to put something in print, not going to happen immediately. But you know what? Client calls us up and says, I got a spot running next hour, but I really need to change my message right now. Okay, we'll change your message for you.
You just brought up some really good points there about, like on a content side, you mentioned how maybe the WWE would get mentioned now where they normally wouldn't. And you talked about how right. advertising right now, I was on a conversation last week with Ad Results, and they talk, you know, they represent FanDuel and they work with SeatGeek, and those two companies right now have to suspend advertising. And those are big accounts. It's not that they wouldn't like to sponsor a sports station. They just can't make money the way they normally would, so they have to hit the pause button. And so those who are continuing to advertise, have you found yourself yet, Mark, having to do anything different for an advertiser than you normally would do on WFAN or on CBS Sports Radio?
Not really. We do have some clients, I guess, who want to change copy more often, who want to be more creative, who will often ask, you know, how do we make people feel better about our product and how do we show them that we care? So, you know, we have to, you know, stick our creative people on them and say, here are some good ideas. Here's the best way to get your message across that you really do care about your people, that, you know, you are taking care of your own workers and that you still want business from people. But if your company can't do business right now, but you still want your name out there, we'll help you get your name out there. Tell people what you are doing for your own workers. Tell people what you are doing to contribute. You know, maybe you've got a factory that was making one product, but now you're making masks. Just say what you can do to contribute, you know, if you can't be selling your product at the moment because you still want top of mind out there. You know, what we've also found is that, you know, in New York, and I guess on the national, you know, for Westwood that sells it, is we all have a variety of platforms. And in New York, we have WFAN. We have two news stations, WINS and WCBS. We have, you know, our classic hit station, CBS FM. We've got an alternative rock station at 92.3. We've got New York's country at 94.7. We have WNEW FM, which is hot AC. So we have a station that can get your message across. If, you know, if you think that the sports audience is right for you, then, you know, that's what we're here for. If you think the news stations can provide what you want, that's what we're here for. Mm-hmm. If you think that the people are listening to one of our music formats, then put your spots there. We're very, very flexible. We're not telling people, oh, you know, you got to be on this station and here's what the rate is. It's like, what can we do that's going to work for you? I believe after the crisis ends, whenever that is, because it will at some point, is we will continue to be much more flexible probably than we've ever been. And I think that doesn't just apply to us. I think that applies to the whole industry.
You've went through some real challenges when you're programming in New York City. You know, you were there when 9/11 happened, and it was the most catastrophic mm-hmm. event I've ever seen in my lifetime. And this is probably the closest one we're dealing with right now. You know, in both of these, if you look at the impact of the coronavirus, both of them have really been a huge focus of New York City. Like 9/11 impacted the whole world, but it took place in our backyard, and now coronavirus is happening all over the world. But New York has been, at, as you mentioned earlier, the epicenter. How was that situation with what you dealt with during 9/11 different or comparable to what you're going through now?
One word you can use that's similar to both is catastrophic. The morning of 9/11, I happened to be in the studio that morning producing the show for IMUS. Bernard McGuirk was out on the street that day because it was also the New York City mayoral primary. So, you know, that was a morning where, you know, we were hoping to get some laughs, you know, Bernie talking to people, asking their opinion of the primary and stuff like that. And we got a lot of that for, you know, 2.5 hours. And then all of a sudden about 8:45 came along and the world changed. The world changed, not yep. just New York, but yes, New York was the epicenter. And shortly after we kind of saw what was going on, but weren't sure, Warner Wolf, who was doing sports 3 days a week, happened to be one of his days where he wasn't in the studio, but lived in a building directly looking at the World Trade Tower, called in and was giving us the play-by-play. You know, we played it back a number of times. And I just remember how scared we all were. And that went for IMUS too, but he handled it really well on the air. And he stayed on the air until 1 o'clock. Mike came in from Long Island. He was able to get in. Chris was not able to get in from Connecticut at that point. And Mike stayed on until, I don't remember, I think it was 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And I stayed in the studio and produced the whole day. And I remember also caring about my older son was working in Lower Manhattan. That happened to be a day where he had bought an apartment uptown. It was uptown that day. So he could have been right down there at the epicenter of it. So we thank God that, you know, he was not down there that day. And he eventually came over to the radio station, got able to get out of the city and come to Queens, which is where we were. And we went home. But the thing about 9/11 was that, yes, it was catastrophic. And certainly, really, for days, we didn't know what else was going to happen, which nobody really knew. But 10 days later, you know, the Mets were playing baseball at Shea Stadium. The Yankees were on the road. Baseball was back. I think the NFL missed 1 week. It's not as if everybody got back to normal, because a lot of security measures and things changed after that, and our way of looking at the world changed, and people were getting sick, and people were dying. But most of that really was centered in New York, as you point out, because that's where the two trade towers came down, and all of the collateral damage that happened, the first responders and how many got sick and developed cancer or, you know, breathing problems, respiratory problems. And many didn't die or get very sick right away, but over time they did. And it's not that even to this day it's not finite, but you didn't feel it was infinite. With what's happening now, it's been a different kind of a shutdown. You know, New York kind of shut down for a bit, but it wasn't as if every restaurant was closed. It wasn't as if every business stopped. You know, there was a short period of time where nobody knew what was going on. This has now been, since it's taken on this level, you know, they're working on ideas for a vaccine, but they say 12 to 18 months. They're working on which drugs will hopefully help some of the symptoms, or maybe at least catch it early enough that they can do some good, so that maybe people won't get as sick. The ones that are getting very sick, maybe there's things that they can do. And, you know, there are a lot of trial and error out there, and a lot of different drugs and medications that are being worked on. And I don't think there are any answers. And will there be more testing? Hopefully the answer to that is yes. Will everybody have to be tested? You know, the answer is maybe they will have to test everybody. And, you know, we have, what, 320 million people who live in the United States. That's a lot of people and a lot of testing.
Right.
They only have the tip of the iceberg at this point on who has been tested. But right now, I think people are feeling, and maybe I'm speaking for myself, but I think I'm speaking for others, like, when is the end going to come to this? You know, there are a lot of people who are itching to come out of the cocoon. They want to be out there, especially younger people, who there has not been the same kind of physical impact that there have been on older people and compromised health people. There's certainly been much more there. So younger people, it's like, why can't I go back to work? Why can't I go to a bar? I want to go party with my friends. But you never know who's carrying it at this point. You could be a carrier and having no effects, but you could be passing it along to somebody else. You know, maybe you're a kid or a teenager or a young adult, and you're in a crowd with some older people. You're fine. And then all of a sudden you're passing something on, the virus, to somebody else, and that person gets sick. So there's this whole mystery that's still out there. We don't have a cure. We don't have a vaccine. You know, so many different groups, medical groups, hospitals, doctors, private companies are working on solutions, creating stuff, but it doesn't happen overnight, and you have to do tests, and you don't know what's going to work and not have any side effects, or have side effects that hopefully don't matter. There's still a long way to go before everything is fixed.
I want to ask you, you know, I mentioned about how you navigated in 9/11 and how it was comparable to what we're dealing with now, and those are two of probably the most catastrophic situations. You've dealt with lesser controversies in the grand scheme of those that we're comparing them to, but whether it was Carton, Imus, you know, it seemed like Mike and Chris always were dominating the back page of the newspaper with something they said about each other or the station. When you're going through things as a programmer, whether it's something majorly disruptive like what we're dealing with now with the coronavirus, or a talent issue that clearly has impacted the station but wasn't part of the plan, how do you handle that as a manager internally and externally that might be useful for someone who's in your shoes, Mark, in another city listening to this?
They're all difficult situations, but you're right. They're not necessarily life situations. But I can remember when Mike and Chris, you know, had rough times, it just, you know, it was like the worst catastrophe in the world. Or, you know, the whole thing that happened with Imus back in 2007 was the worst thing that ever happened in the world. Or when Chris left a year later, it was the worst thing that ever happened in the world. But putting those things in perspective, they were not the worst things that ever happened in the world. And I realized, as a programmer, you have to deal with them. You're not happy with the situation. What is the solution? You need to always be thinking, of solutions when there's a problem. You know, how are we going to deal with this? When it came time that Mike and Chris were going to split, you know, what was my solution going to be? You know, and the solution at that point in time worked out okay for us. Mike was going to be a solo host in the afternoon. And, you know, would he get the ratings that, you know, were going to keep us where we were at the top of the pile and then 25-54? You know, and I think Mike would even tell you he had some trepidation, like, you know, will it succeed or won't it succeed? And should I have a partner? And basically what we thought about together, and, you know, he really emphasizes, if I put somebody in there and that show fails, I'm going to get blamed for it. But if I'm going to get blamed for it, then I'm going to fail by myself. And if I succeed, great, we'll be where we are now or better, and all is well and good and nothing will change. And when Imus left, my first thought was, okay, do I need to get another Imus type in the morning? And the answer was, at first, I thought maybe that's what I wanted, and that was the direction I was pointing myself in. Was it going to be a Morning Joe who was over at MSNBC? Was it going to be Jim Cramer who was at CNBC? Because we had the partnership, if you remember, with NBC, with Imus being on MSNBC. Is it going to be Lou Dobbs, who I think was working at CNN at the time? Was it going to be Boomer Esiason and Monica Crowley, and they would do some politics in the show? But the picture became much clearer to me. Was it even going to be Mike and Chris, or one of them doing the morning show? It became clear to me that we now needed a sports show in the morning. We needed a sports show, but I needed it to be very entertaining. So what was the solution there? You know, Boomer still wanted to very much be on, but it's like, no, you and Monica are not going to work. And he tried it with Chris Collinsworth. He tried it with Chris Russo, and I just wasn't feeling it. And then when the possibility of Craig Carton being available came up, you know, and I put them in a room and gave them a bunch of topics to talk about. And Chris Oliveira was sitting with me, and I looked at him after about 5 or 10 minutes of them shooting the breeze on their various topics. I said, there's my morning show. He said, you're sure? He said, I'm sure. And I was surprised that I actually uttered those words, because I'm very conservative usually about stuff like that. Like, I'm surprised they didn't say, yeah, they could do. I said, yeah, I am sure that's the morning show. And then, you know, Chris helped me fight to make sure, because, you know, Craig Carton had issues that, you know, they were easily fixable and not as bad as people had thought because they had done their homework. So we were able to resolve those issues about what people thought he may have had issues with. And look what it turned into, you know, Boomer and Carton for all those years. And when Craig's situation came up, it was like, okay, Boomer, you can do this. We're going to find the right person for you. And we tried different people. And, you know, when we brought, when Eric Spitz and I brought Greg Giannotti back to New York to host the CBS Sports Radio morning show with Brian Jones, you know, there was always some thought, and I think it was in Gio's head too, that, you know, maybe there'll be a place at Fan someday. And, you know, Greg was amazingly creative. His show with Brian Jones was a really good morning show, but we wanted to try Greg with Boomer. And at first it was like, you know, maybe this will work, maybe it won't work. And finally, I really thought, okay, this is the show. I think this is going to work. And Boomer had some other ideas, but he thought about it long and hard. And I remember we had a meeting at a restaurant nearby, and we all sat and said, I really think this is going to work. And Boomer was finally convinced and said, I'm all in. Let's get Greg on board. And look how well that's been. That show has been, you know, on top of the ratings in Men 25-54. It's very entertaining. It's not the same show as Boomer and Carton, but it's the same show in the sense that we're getting the results that we wanted out of that show. And, you know, they're different personalities. They each bring different stuff to the table, but both are extremely entertaining. They're both creative and funny. And, you know, it's an entertaining morning show. Is it a sports show? Yeah. But is it a lot more than that? Yes. I gave the two of them the same advice I gave to Boomer and Craig, which was everything emanates in the show from the world of sports. Where we go from there, nobody knows. I want it to be entertaining, but let's just make sure that, you know, that's our base, and let's bring other people into the mix because I think that's what people want out of a morning show. And maybe other day parts too, but certainly in a morning show.
No, those guys are just a tremendous listen. And I think you're right. I mean, at the end, styles are different, but as long as the results are the same and the chemistry is good, people are going to spend time with it. I know you've got a radio station to run, so I don't want to take up your whole day, but I do want to bounce two last things off of you because you just mentioned ratings.
Okay.
And I want to, I don't know if you saw this. In Australia, Nielsen ratings were recently put on hold because of the outbreak of the coronavirus. And listeners right now, if you look at their behavior patterns, they're going to be very different because people are now not in a car. They're spending more time at home. They may listen to the radio station more because they're home. They also may watch a lot more TV because they're home. So even if we have good numbers to report, you go into this next year, I don't know that you can count on somebody spending 6 hours a day with a radio station when they're not confined in the house. So it's an interesting, you know, obviously if the numbers are in your favor, you love it. If they're not, you can at least point to the fact that behavior was off kiltered from what it usually is. I asked Matt Nahigian about it last week, and I want to get your thoughts on it. What Nielsen's doing in Australia, suspending ratings for right now, given the fact that all these behaviors are different, advertising is down. Is that something that should happen in the States, or do you think we should continue as we always have?
Well, I think we should continue. You know, I'll tell you one thing about Entercom. We're a no-excuses company. WFAN, 1010 Winds, WCBS 880. You know what? You got to always look past the actual ratings. Look what we deliver with our product. So, yeah, the ratings are going to, you know, maybe not always be the numbers we want to see right now. And maybe there's more or less people listening to one format or another. But we've got to be able to, again, be creative and show our advertisers that what they're promoting or selling is working on our radio stations, regardless of what the numbers say. Because you're right, listening is going to be very different right now. Do our, you know, our news stations and WFAN have a tremendous amount of people listening in their cars most of the time? The answer is yes, we do. Are we having that happen right now? The answer has to be no, because you go out on the road and there's not a whole lot of traffic, even on the highways.
Yep.
Or, you know, on the major arteries getting in and out of the city and stuff like that. Okay, we know that. So what we now tell people to do is make sure you're listening on your smart speaker. Make sure you're listening on your phone. Make sure you're listening on your computer. You know, there are all these outlets that people can listen to us. It's a matter sometimes of retraining people. And if we're providing the information, the fun, the entertainment that they're looking for, we're there. We haven't gone anywhere. And, you know, again, we have to, and I believe Entercom strongly believes in this, we sell more than ratings. We sell concept. We sell features. We sell events when there are events to be sold, you know, maybe not at this moment in time, but, you know, we have the Yankees, we have the Mets. I'm playing back, you know, classic Yankees and Mets games during the week and classic Giants games on Sundays and some NFL games on Saturday. We did some with NCAA games. And we tell our advertisers, okay, maybe the games aren't happening, but these are some classic games. There are people listening to them. And you know what? You can move some of your dollars in there if you'd like, or mm-hmm. add dollars, or look for other advertisers. And if you listen to the game, you're going to hear sponsors in there, because you know what? There are people listening. Like tonight and tomorrow, we're playing back game 6 and 7 of the 1986 World Series. That goes beyond New York and Boston. So
I want to end on one other note, because mm-hmm. you just talked about entertainment. And, you know, look, I've listened to Francesa for 30 years, and I remember Mike would always say, I don't touch politics. But, and now granted, his activity on the station is different than what it used to be, but he's certainly become a little more outspoken with some of the recent events. And I think it kind of fits the mm-hmm. tone of what we're all dealing with. You can make the argument mm-hmm. that it blurs the line with existing fans, and maybe they don't like it, but there are probably some new fans who like that he's doing that. So, as his longtime program director, friend, and boss, when he goes down that road, do you find mm-hmm. yourself tuning it up a little more interested, or do you find yourself going, oh, Mike, what are you doing?
I'm perfectly fine with it. And a good example last night was, although he was talking about things that, you know, the president had said and what was going on with the latest with COVID-19, he also spent a whole bunch of time talking about Jackie Robinson. you know, because the anniversary of when he first played with the Dodgers. So he's able to mix it up. He always was able to do it. And you know what? He's been around long enough that who am I to say to him, you know, what to do? That was never really an issue with him. Mike always knew what the right content was. I trust him. And, you know, he is delivering what he feels is important to deliver out there. And he's doing that. You know, not everybody may want to hear what he has to say, but, you know, maybe everybody didn't want to hear what he had to say, you know, for the last 30 years in the sports world either. But I respect him. And, you know, he knows how to obtain an audience. You know, I think he's, you know, right on in wanting to talk about COVID-19. And if it leads into, you know, some political talk about the way things are being handled, whatever the direction is, I think he's speaking from his heart. And I think people have always respected that about Mike, that he's always said what's inside there. That's what comes out.
On that note, when New York's impacted, you're going to expect Mike to step up for New York.
Vox populi, as they say. Voice of the people.
Hey, Mark, I want to thank you for the time today. I know you've got a lot going on in your world, and for you to carve out a half hour for me was greatly appreciated. Thanks so much.
Jason, you're more than welcome. Thanks.